You're listening to Meeting Pod, the podcast powered by Meeting Place, the premier magazine and news source for the meat and poultry processing industry, and Alt Meat Magazine, the only business information resource for the exploding alternative meat industry. Welcome. I'm Chris Scott, host of Meeting Pod and contributing editor at Meeting Place and Alt Meat Magazines. Our guest today is Keith Gorrell, Vice President R&D and Commercialization at Ed Miniat LLC, a provider of specialized lines of custom-crafted meats and other proteins to such clients as restaurants, food service outlets, prepared food providers, and consumer packaged goods companies. The more than 120-year-old processor aims to consistently work with its wide range of customers to co-develop the exact products that the clients believe will work best for their customers. This means that the South Holland, Illinois-based company relies heavily on its R&D functions to make sure it lives up to the motto launched by its founder that Miniat is, quote, ready to serve, unquote. Welcome to Meeting Pod, Keith, and thanks for spending some time with us today.
Hello, and thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
It is our pleasure. Let's start with an overview of the line of custom-crafted proteins that Miniat provides to clients. Part of the product lineup features beef, chicken, and pork dishes that are flavored and prepared to the customer's specifications, including sous vide proteins that are ready for final processing in customer kitchens. Do you have any kind of typical request when a potential customer begins the process working with Ed Miniat?
Well, I can't really say that there are typical. We get a lot of different requests from different types of customers, new and existing. But I'd say the majority of them are restaurant chains that have a unique culinary crafted back-of-house recipe that they want to maintain but have made by a processor like us because of their growth or for food safety or for efficiency or quality reasons. So we offer that service of matching that product and maintaining that culinary crafted quality and do it in a way that we can process at scale and do it at a competitive cost and also offer possibly a labor savings for their back of house operation.
And those proteins can either be center of the plate type products or accessories to other meals that they already serve. So it sounds like you and your team on the R&D side of the business are consistently being challenged by a wide variety of proteins, preparations, formulations, and flavorings that customers bring to the table when they start to work with you. Can you briefly describe the process used for a new food service client, like a university cafeteria or a mall-based chain, for example, who's looking to improve their taco offerings?
Sure. Typically, we would vet the customer. Sales team will do that to make sure that they're a good strategic fit for us, that they're in a growth mode, that our product will fit with their platform, and that their company is financially healthy and we're matched for size. You know, we don't want to overcommit on somebody that's too large and we couldn't produce all of their volume. And we also have minimum size quantities that we want to produce to be competitive.
And that's how you control your costs as well, right? Okay. Now, Miniat currently works with a wide range of customers, including regional and national restaurants, and even grab-and-go assemblers. Do you and your team conduct or examine any research in terms of trends for a particular segment of your client base? For example, if more people are eating away from home more often and are buying more of a specific cuisine than before, like Mediterranean salads that contain protein, how do you stay on top of these trends so you can be prepared to help a client meet changing consumer demand?
That's a great question. We have multiple avenues to, I guess, stay on top of trends. One is we subscribe to data services that are widely available in the industry to track trends. We get information from our seasoning suppliers, our flavor suppliers, some of our customers and their culinary teams. We have a very good chef on staff who helps us stay abreast of trends in the culinary world. And our R&D team is constantly experimenting and researching opportunities for staying on top of those trends.
So can you give us an idea on a fairly vague slate? So you've got chefs, you've got preparers, you've got people that study the data on the trends. How is that communication taken care of?
So we stay connected tightly internally with our chef, our R&D scientists. We don't have a marketing team per se, but our sales team stays abreast of a lot of that information on trends. So we're in constant communication through our weekly staff meetings, through our commercial team meetings, and just hallway conversations and experimenting in the kitchens, trying things out and pursuing those that we think customers would be interested in.
Can you give us an idea of what an ideal client or customer of yours would be?
That's a great question as well. I would say the ideal customer would be one that is growing and has plans to open a lot of restaurants in the future. Somebody who is financially healthy and backed with capital, and somebody whose products fit our type of processing, which is sous vide. So some products lend themselves very well to that cooking technique and others do not. So those that would be a good fit, you know, would be a sous vide type product, or maybe something that we can sous vide that appears to be custom crafted in the back of their restaurants.
And now, do you find that there are certain types of clients that you're trying to attract, like, say, higher end restaurants versus the grab and go people, that is a better fit for sous vide prepared food?
We've been most successful with fast casual. Those that you might be familiar with would have a menu board, and the client walks up and they select their components off of that menu and they build that entree or that meal in front of them using a variety of different dishes at the hot bar. And our proteins would be a critical component of that.
This may be a little bit out of scope, but do you work with them as well, these customers of yours, to promote that these products are available at these fast casual places?
No, not necessarily.
Okay. I'm just wondering, because I would assume that certain customers might want some support in explaining to the people they're selling to why this is a better product than it was before, or why they're improving the flavor or the texture of what they were serving before.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. You know, typically consumers, once they find something they like in a restaurant, any little bit of change is not good in most cases. And so that's really what our trick is with working with our clientele, is maintaining whatever they've created and they may have built from scratch in the restaurant, and they now have grown to a point where they don't want to have to cook necessarily in the restaurants. They want prepared products that they just need to heat and serve, but taste and look and behave exactly like what they had made previously in the back of the restaurant.
Let's take a look back internally at Miniot's operations. An atmosphere of collaboration is obviously a critical part of how your company approaches prospective customers and retains existing clients. How is this concept reinforced throughout the R&D operation, and how tough is it to maintain the internal communication and collaboration that's critical to developing and maintaining successful products?
Well, I would say collaboration is the key. In fact, my team teases me a little bit about quoting that all too often, but internal and external communication is a key element of that collaboration, and staying aligned both internally and with a customer, working cross-functionally as a team to make sure that we're at the right levels of communication, and that we can work technical to technical, or quality to quality, or chef to chef. And it's not necessarily transactional. It's a very strategic process in how you communicate and just collaborate with your customers, and then working internally to deliver on the customer expectations.
Absolutely. Well, on a quick side note, can you give us a brief concept of how your company fared during COVID, when there was a huge drop off in restaurant customer people going into restaurants and dining there? What kind of lessons did you possibly learn from that experience?
Well, we learned a lot, and it was a very difficult time for our company because we are so heavily vested in food service, and we were hit very, very hard. But we also have a portion of our business that is business to business, and we sell to other processors in the prepared foods category. So we have components that go into frozen entrees or soups that go to retail. So that business grew for us while our food service was shrinking rapidly. And we also pivoted at that time to make some retail products for a particular chain of restaurants. We were successful to an extent, but that business model of retail and the small packaging just was not a very good fit for our company. And so it's still on our radar today, but we took a very hard hit during COVID, and our food service business obviously now has come back. And so we're grateful for that. Thank you for asking. That was a difficult time that I don't think anybody wants to relive.
No, of course not. But I think it's very important to also recognize the capability of pivoting, which a lot of places did very, very well. It sounds like yours did, definitely, but a lot of them didn't. And one would only hope that within the food industry and a couple of other places, that kind of innovation will continue.
It's hard to turn a cruise ship on a dime, though. So in a big business with a lot of capital investments that are made to run food service-sized packaging, it was difficult to pivot to retail. And there's lead times and challenges getting equipment and things like that, too, that we needed for the retail piece. And it was just difficult to do it that fast.
Well, are you finding that some avenues opened up that you might want to continue serving rather than going back to only what you guys were doing before the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, we built relationships and, you know, found some potential clients if we want to get back into retail. So sure, yeah, there were definitely some good outcomes from that as well.
Well, again, it's a function of pivoting and learning the lesson versus pivoting and panicking, right? Well, let's take a look at food safety and producing the proteins that Miniat produces in relation to advances that you and your team may have seen in the last decade or so. Do you believe that maintaining food safety standards has become easier or more challenging for food preparation companies than in days past?
I would say maintaining the standards have become a little more challenging just because the landscape of the government and the regulations have changed a little bit, so we have to stay on top of those. Fortunately for us, you know, that are making sous vide products, that's a very food safe product to begin with because that product is not exposed to the atmosphere after packaging and cooking and chilling. So as long as you maintain the cold chain, you're in pretty good shape. Now, if you've got post-lethality exposed products, which we also produce, meaning we open those packages back up and further process them in the form of like slicing, dicing, or shredding, and then repackaging or freezing or shipping refrigerated, I would say there's been a lot of nice advances with our suppliers who have created natural antimicrobials that help us and still maintain that clean label. You know, but for all of this, you know, our food chain still remains the safest in the world. And so we're grateful to be a part of that. And we have very high internal standards that exceed, government regulated standards.
Of course. And that packaging aspect must be a really critical moment for any food processor. Are there any special techniques that you use that allows for almost guaranteed safety when you're packaging and repackaging the product?
Well, if they were special, you know, I would say I'm not able to, you know, expand on those during this interview just because of protecting that critical nature of our processes. But, you know, it's pretty standard equipment that we use, and it's a hermetic seal. And we do our own internal testing and validation to make sure that we're making a safe food product and that the packaging is going to hold up through distribution until it gets to the customer and they open it.
And in terms of meeting timetables, does that get in the way of the things you have to actually do for particular customers?
Are you talking about during the development cycle?
Yes, during the development cycle, at least, yes.
You know, one of the things we pride ourselves on is speed and accuracy. So working closely at the right levels, again, with our customers and collaborating, we can move very quickly, and we always follow the customer's pace. So I would say that we're very nimble. And again, our secret weapon, I guess, is speed and accuracy of the development and how we commercialize. So being able to scale up and make what we were able to make in the lab during the development cycle and in the R&D kitchen.
Now, when it comes to developing those new flavors as trends emerge in the food world, is the strategy to test spices and other flavor enhancements before a prospective client emerges, or to wait until they come in and ask for specific custom products to meet their needs at that point in time?
You know, as a R&D team and as a culinary team and working together, we experiment with flavors and seasonings all of the time and try to figure out, you know, some new opportunities that we can take proactively to a customer. But in a lot of instances, you know, our customers are coming to us on a regular basis and they have an idea already in mind, or they may have a flavoring or a spice blend that's already specified. So we're working with them as the projects come in, but we also have a good base of suppliers who present us with new trends and new seasonings, new flavors. And so it's constant and it comes from both ways, I guess.
So it sounds like you're also developing your own things to take out to the field, but also taking in whatever the customer's heard about and wanted to look into themselves. Now, the high price of proteins these days is affecting consumers in general and food service operations on a more general scale. Are you seeing notable adjustments among your clients when it comes to which meats are gaining interest because of higher price points?
Well, that's another benefit of sous vide. I call it the great equalizer because you can take those lesser quality cuts of meat, not in terms of like condition, but you can use locomotive muscles from a beef animal per se, those from the chuck and the round, and you can make them very tender and palatable and get them right up there with like the middle meats in terms of tenderness. And so our technology lends itself to using some of those lesser quality or perceived lesser quality cuts. But at the same time, you know, some of our customers are willing to pay high prices for good quality products because that's what brings the customers back in. We also see some availability challenges just with natural and NAE and some of the other special cuts. But we help our customers navigate the market and our meat suppliers help us do the same.
Now, for those out there that might not really understand what sous vide is, could you give them an example of, I bought my wife a sous vide kit many years ago and she uses it occasionally, but could you give an idea of what a commercialized sous vide operation entails?
Sous vide is French for under vacuum. And in a commercial operation, you would take your cuts of meat, season them, maybe inject them with a marinade, vacuum tumble or just tumble, tenderize and help that seasoning to penetrate the surface of the meat. You may do a heat application in the form of like grilling, searing, or braising. And then you vacuum package that with a flexible film. And so by pulling that vacuum, you've now created a hermetic seal. And then you simply cook that in a water bath for a specified time and temperature to achieve a particular degree of doneness, from rare at 132 on beef up to 195 degrees on something like a pot roast. So you've got a broad spectrum of doneness. It's delicious and tender and moist, and it's something that is difficult to recreate without the vacuum and without a water bath. So that's why sous vide wands have become popular in do-it-yourselfers at home that want to experiment with a different cooking technique, and it's a lot of fun.
Yes, it can be. I've actually had firsthand experience with that. Now, you had mentioned some further processing once the meat is finished. Can you just briefly describe what that might entail?
Sure. It's simply opening that package, adding more value to it in the form of slicing, dicing, or shredding so that it gets it more prepared for the restaurateur or for a CPG company who's going to put diced beef in a pot pie or a frozen entree or a can of soup. And so those would go through an IQF process so they're easy to handle at the next processor level. And a lot of our food service customers appreciate the added value because it takes out an additional step in the back of their restaurants as well.
So you're giving them an advantage that they might not have foreseen once the product arrives in their kitchens.
Yes, absolutely. And it's really appreciated at certain levels in certain restaurant chains.
And finally, the internal operations at Miniat and the variety of challenges posed by client needs seem to have the potential to become even more complex as demand for particular proteins or cooking methods seem to independently shift over time. What might you see as particular challenges that your company or the Miniat R&D team specifically might face in the coming years?
Yeah, I would say sourcing is one of those challenges. We see that come and go with different proteins, you know, with different diseases in the animals and the flocks. We're seeing avian flu right now, and so that presents sourcing challenges. We're seeing declining herds of cattle in the industry. And that's why prices are going to climb a little bit. Also, processing to the client specs is a challenge. And maintaining that back of house crafted quality that we offer and really remaining competitive and relevant to our customers and their clients as well.
Well, I'd like to thank Keith Girl for providing his insights as Vice President of R&D and Commercialization at Ed Miniat LLC and giving us an inside look as to how a prepared foods manufacturer adjusts to ever-changing client and consumer needs. And of course, thanks per usual to our Meeting Pod listeners for tuning in again this week. That's a wrap. Until next time.
Remember to tune in on Mondays to get the inside track on the people and the processes that drive the protein industry. Be sure to subscribe to Meeting Pod on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow Meeting Place and Alt Meet magazines on social media, and be sure to visit our websites at meetingplace.com and altmeet.net.